happening?
What's up? So do you have an intro or something?
I do have an intro, bro, but I just wanted everybody to hear your audio real quick.
This crisp 4D audio?
Oh my god, what?
I know.
Wow. Tell them, what is this exactly?
Bro, this that Blue Yeti, you know what I'm saying?
No, but what did you tell me right before I pressed record?
Bro, I forgot. Crazy.
Oh,
that's so wild.
Something about that ASMR?
I don't know what you're talking about. I have no recollection of that conversation.
Oh. All right, let's get right into this, you guys. Hey. Bro, that's the most hectic intro I've ever done in my life. I always introduce.
Is this actually how you're going to start it?
Yeah, bro. What?
Okay. I was going to post this on my LinkedIn, but never mind.
Khalas, bro. We'll take it out for you then, bro. I'll save this for our memories. Are you leaving me the only one on video when you're just watching me?
Bro, Allah, I don't know how to get my camera to work.
You're such a creep, bro. Why are you watching me like that?
Bro, if you could see me right now, you'd be pretty uncomfortable.
I know, bro. I know. I know you're literally like this.
No comment. You can go on FaceTime if you want.
Okay.
No, wait. You actually want to? Okay, sure.
Yo, let's actually do proper intro. Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Anything Goes. I'm your host, Bilal Ali. And today we got a very special guest on. It's my boy. It's my homie. We got Saif Mitwalli. Welcome on, brother.
Assalamu alaikum, brother. How are you doing?
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Alhamdulillah, my man. Alhamdulillah, bro. Thank you for coming on. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Yeah? All right. So today, Saif and I are going to talk about a little bit about himself, a little bit about what he's doing in life, his goals, and yeah, I'll just let him introduce himself better off. So let's hear it, Habib.
Yeah, so my name's Saif. I'm a 20-year-old, no major achievements, not too sure what I'm on. No, I'm kidding. I'm studying math and finance. I'm doing research at the U of A right now on algorithmic trading. I'm a kid whiz, and I'm going to be the most successful person anybody's ever met. So
that's the
summary.
Wow. So see, we're going to jump into that. But before we jump into that, I just got to make a comment. This guy, anywhere we go, any conversation we be having with people, he's like, yo, I'm going to be the most successful, right?
100%.
And yo, in my last episode, Kuda and I were talking, and what we were saying is that Kuda said something about he wants to be on Rolling Loud, right? Mm-hmm. And he was like, yo, I that's too big. I can't be saying all that. And I'm like, no, you always got to say, you know, your dreams, put them out to the world. And that's what Saif's doing right now. He's putting out his dreams to the world. Saying it's gonna happen.
Bro, I'm not putting out my dreams to the world. Putting out the prophecy I seen.
Oh.
It's the future I know already exists.
Wow.
No, you don't understand, bro. I've said this several times where when it comes to me and success, I've actually said this a lot. I said I honestly think if there was a bullet in my mouth and I shot the gun in my mouth, I don't think I could die, because if I was dead, I couldn't be successful. And I know I'm going to be successful.
Wow.
So I know for nothing can kill me.
Wow. Inshallah.
Unless God wants me, you know. It's all by the power of God. You never know.
Yeah, that's true. All right, brother. Tell us about how you got into math and finance before we get into your research.
Yo, so anybody who's known me for a while knows I've been a total math nerd. Been loving math since I was a kid. I was always super smart at it, super bright. Taught myself calculus when I was 15. I competed in like math competitions and stuff. And I always really loved math as well. When it comes to like finance and stuff, just different mentors and different people I knew who were involved in business has always kept me interested. So when I found out that there was an intersection with math, computer science, and finance, and that was in this like the quant space in finance, then to me that was like the perfect kind of goal. That was the perfect career for me. So then that's what got me in. That's what got me enrolled right now for math and finance, and we'll see where it takes me.
There you go, man. There you go. That's incredible. So how long have you been interested in math and finance? You said it's been a while. How long has that been, would you say?
No, so I'd say math, I've obsessed over math since I was like 8 years old. Wow. Like I would since I was a kid, I would always be like watching different videos and trying to learn like different advanced stuff and like just being like super interested. The specific intersection for math and finance, that was probably when I first entered university. I remember on my notepad, I wrote down all my different passions in order. I think it was math, computer science, finance, and then fitness. And then I didn't know that there was a space for 3 out of 4 of those. And then once I found out that there was a space, then that's what kind of made me like develop a passion for it and just stay super interested in that sort of field and space.
That's incredible, man. That's incredible. You know what? You're shooting for those dreams that you've had in a long time, right?
Yeah.
Tell me about your research. How'd you get into that? How'd you get on board with that? You know, who's your advisor? How did that all happen?
So right now I'm doing research. I'm an undergraduate student researcher. It's all pretty much like self-directed, but it is collaborative with me and my advisor. I got what's called the NSERC USRA. So that's a grant of, I think, $6,000 that gives undergraduates funding to go and do their own pursuits and everything. And how I got started with it was I was looking at the U of A's prof list, and the first one that showed up that was mathematical finance was Chris Frey. And then I opened up his Google Scholar page. First paper I saw was cannabis dark markets in Canada. What were the effects on the economy when cannabis became legalized? Yeah. The second one was cryptocurrencies and the hidden effects of this and that and all this stuff. So I was like, yo, this prop seems so much fun. So I sent him an email and I was like, yo, can I help you with your research? Like, it seems fun. I want to do something like this. And then at that time he told me like he wasn't taking anybody but to come at him next year. So the next year came, and then I came at him. I introduced myself, and we discussed different opportunities. And he brought a paper that he found interesting that was related to algorithmic trading. And he asked me like, oh, what do you think about working on a problem related to this paper? Because I told him that was my main interest was algorithmic trading. And we found like a common problem that we wanted to work on, and then applied for the grant, got accepted. And then I've been working on that for like the past 2 months.
That's incredible, man. Because I don't take it, you know, obviously I'm in university too, right? Same university, U of A, right? You know, I don't see too many undergraduates who are doing research, right?
So right.
How many people are doing research, you know, in, I'm not sure, is this in the math department or what exactly, right? But
so
how many people are currently undergrads?
So there's two types of positions people can have pretty much as an undergrad. You can see research assistants. So that'll be like you're helping a prof with their own kind of work. You're working in their lab. You're helping them do something that they're already going for. For the undergraduate research, it's a lot more similar to maybe like an honors thesis or even maybe like a master's thesis, depending on the course, if that makes sense. So then for this specific grant, I think I want to say, I'm not too sure, that there were maybe 14 that were available for the Bachelor of Science for the U of A this year. So about 14 people had that opportunity. And then we also have the MSS, which is another one. I don't know how much those gave out, but the NSERC is a government grant, so that's not from the U of A. And then I think it's called the MSS that is from the U of A, and they give those to the students. But I would say ballpark 14 to 20 students.
Somewhat. There you go, man.
Yeah.
There you go. That's interesting. I, you know, like I said, I don't see too many opportunities for, you know, undergrads, right? So it's good you hopped on that, you know, and you're working out right now with that.
Right.
Before, you know, I guess we jump in, you know, and all that, we haven't even introduced what algorithmic trading is. So I don't actually even know what that is, really. I can, you know,
right.
think what it is, but I'm not sure what it is. So explain it to me and explain it to everybody listening.
So I think to first understand what algorithmic trading is, you first got to think about what it's not. So there's investing, where you look at a company, you say, this company, it's like selling a great product. It's in a market that's not too competitive. It has a good management structure. It has great marketing team. It looks like it's going to keep doing it. It has a lot of great plans. I'm going to go and give it some of my money. And then I suspect they're going to be able to use my money to make more money, and I'll get return on my money. Right?
Okay.
That's investing. And when you invest, you kind of plan to hold for a year, 2 years, or 5 years, or however long. You buy it because you think this company is going to go places, and I like what mm-hmm. the company stands for, and I like what they're doing, and I think if I give them my money, I'll get more money back.
Yeah.
Right? So that's investing. So then what's trading? Trading is kind of like, and this isn't really technically correct, but instead of being based on fundamental analysis, so looking at how a company works and how it operates, trading is basically making decisions where you think people are going to move a stock in a certain direction, whether that's up or down, and trying to capitalize money on that. Basically, you might see a certain pattern and you'll think, looking at this pattern, I suspect that in the next hour it's going to go up. So as a little example, if Apple stock has been for the past 5 years or something, or the past year, its average is $100, and right now it's trading at, say, $80, right?
Mm-hmm.
You might think, okay, well, if right now it's 80 and the average is 100, then I'm going to go and buy because I think it's going to go back to 100 because that's the average. But there's no analysis that you're doing. You're not thinking the fair price is 100. You don't have any reasoning why you think it could go up. It could be Apple messed up huge and you just don't see it on the news or whatever. You're just looking kind of at the numbers and saying, I think this is going to happen. That makes sense.
That makes sense. So, yeah.
People have been trading and investing for a long time. What algorithmic trading is, and it's pretty much, it's very different from investing, is you basically have computers automatically do all the different decisions. So it's like systematically executing buying and selling shares of stocks or foreign exchange currencies or cryptocurrencies or whatever. And it has a system that the computer is automatically doing, and no person is saying we should buy or we should sell. Instead, the computer is saying, I'm going to buy, and then it buys 10 of this, and then it sells 15 of that, and it buys 10 of that. And maybe nobody even knows why the computer is doing what it's doing, but mm-hmm. it's doing it all systematically and in turn algorithmically. So that's what algorithmic trading is kind of about.
Okay, bro, that actually that makes a lot of sense. You know, you explained that very well. I like how you explained it, you know, with what it's not first. What exactly do you do in your position in terms of algorithmic trading, right? Because what I'm understanding is that it's like a computer program, right? Like anything else, right? You have your algorithm. So are you the one that's like coding the algorithm or putting in the mathematical equations that create the algorithm, or are you making sure that the algorithm is working correctly, or you're doing every one of those things, or what exactly is your role in this?
Right. So specifically what I'm doing is, one, it's the mathematics of it. So kind of coming up with like a mathematical idea of what should be done. So it's not coding. It's not telling the computer to do it. It's saying, kind of, if you think back to physics, you know, if you say assume no air resistance and assume a person is shaped like a ball and assume all these different things, what's going to be the movement of this person or whatever? If you could think back to kind of physics, how there's like,
yeah.
they'll come up with 10 different assumptions and then say like, oh, the person's going to move like this. And that might not be how it actually works in reality,
right.
but it's kind of like a theoretical way that the dynamics would work out. And then later on, you might remove more and more assumptions and get a more accurate description, but it's still just all mathematical computation, and you're not actually putting it to code. specifically for what I'm doing. And as well, the subsection of algorithmic trading that I'm working in is in what's called optimal execution. So that specific subsection of algorithmic trading is when you have, say the computer decides we should buy Apple right now. It's at $80. We're going to buy it. They want to buy it for $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
How it chooses to send out that $1,000 order, it might do 10 orders and then another 10 and then another 10, or it might do 50 and then 10 and then 20 and then 10, or all these different ways for different advantages. That's in the realm of optimal execution, which is what I'm kind of working on right now.
Interesting. So is this... is algorithmic trading something new, or is it something that's just popped up, or has it been around, you know, since stocks? Obviously, not since the beginning of stocks, but has it been around for a while? Or
so it's fairly new. Like,
okay,
it's like, even if you think about it, computers haven't been around for that long, right? Let alone the huge computational capacity of computers. So kind of the whole realm of like math and finance wasn't really a thing until the 70s. And then algorithmic trading, kind of the biggest part of algorithmic trading right now is when you have electronic markets. So before, if like right now, if you want to go and buy an Apple stock, you probably use Wealthsimple and then you just say like, mm-hmm, buy it, right? But before, you would have to call a broker,
right,
and say, I want to buy this. The broker calls somebody, or actually goes in Times Square or Wall Street, goes to the NASDAQ, and actually goes and writes on a piece of paper, Bilal is buying. Yeah, like you would actually, wow, have to, that's how it used to work before. So then the algorithmic part of it wasn't as advent during that time, right?
Fair.
So
fair.
You also needed the infrastructure of the computerized systems of trading and all this, mm-hmm, different stuff, which as far as my knowledge hasn't been as widespread until like we're looking at like 2010, 2012, when like electronic markets really started becoming apparent everywhere. And then, right, that's when the new field became really like, it really started like taking off and becoming more and more. But there have been people who are using math in finance for a while. There are also, mm-hmm, people who are doing algorithmic trading in finance before that. But mostly like this electronic market thing, to the best of my knowledge, is fairly new.
That makes sense. So basically the, you know, electronic market is what has launched it. Yeah, right?
Yeah, and it added a whole different dimension to it, like a completely different, mm-hmm, dimension to what it was even before that as well.
Because now, can people still, you know, in the past, right, it was like estimation, right? Like you were talking about, like in trading, when you're looking at stocks, right? You're like, hey, this stock is at this price, it dropped to this, or it's climbing to this, whatever, right? You do your own, you know, mathematical equations or your estimations. You just look at the market, what's happening, what's not, the news, right? Previously, right, that was us humans, we're doing all that, you know, choosing what to buy, what to sell, right?
Right.
But now with algorithmic trading, I feel like, from what I'm understanding, is that, you know, a computer is not going to make our errors, right?
Right.
So now when a computer, you know, chooses, hey, you know what, this is truly what is right to buy and what to sell and at the time and all this, right? So right, it does so transaction, right?
Now, and there is, or yeah, you can finish.
Yeah, I was just saying that now, does that cause a hindrance to the market in any way, in the sense that, like, if everybody's using, you know, algorithmic trading, right?
Right.
Does it push certain companies ahead because the algorithm is choosing those companies because it knows those are what's successful and everybody is trading with the same?
So,
if I'm explaining it
well. Right. Yeah. I get what you're saying. So one, a lot of these funds, like, they're not necessarily making big investment decisions. They are kind of working on like seconds. Like, okay, right now, currently, and you're even talking nanoseconds, where they'll buy and sell something in nanoseconds.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to like investing and actually thinking like Coca-Cola is a good company, computers aren't in that space right now where they're making, okay, decisions about this company is a good company to buy in long term. But are you familiar with GameStop?
What happened to GameStop?
Right.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
So I'm not too familiar with all the intricate details about it.
Yeah.
From what I understand, was one, Citadel is a big algorithmic and quantitative hedge fund. Citadel is a very, very huge, where they all have computers pretty much doing everything.
Yeah.
They hire a lot of mathematicians, computer science guys, all this different stuff, all these different PhDs. Citadel was pretty much responsible for what happened with GameStop, where they were what's called shorting. They were heavily shorting GameStop to the point where they were trying to like shove it down into the ground. They were trying to kill the company pretty much.
Wow.
And
yeah.
Then that one Redditor guy saw that as an opportunity and then went to buy it and was telling everybody to buy it because they had to go and close their short positions. And that's where all that different controversy and all those different problems we're having with Citadel on GameStop as an example.
Right.
But also, like, this is considered, like, ideally, if you're working with these algorithms and stuff, you want to own positions in stocks where you almost don't care if they're going to go up or down, and you can kind of make money in both ways. And they have ways to do it, very complex algorithms that I obviously don't understand yet, where they almost don't care too much if the stock is going up or down. Or they might be certain that it's going to go up by 50.1% chance, and they do it 10,000 different times on those 50.1% chances. So then by the end of the day, they made a bunch of money, but they're not necessarily speculating on long-term trends. That's like against even best practice.
Right. Interesting. So do you think there's any, I guess let's talk about the benefits actually first. Let's talk about the benefits of algorithmic trading, and then we can go into maybe what you think the shortcomings might be, at least at this time right now. Or,
I find there's a weak argument to come up with the benefits. Like,
really?
I guess it kind of the main benefit is one, like, is that whenever you personally want to buy Apple or whatever, and you can buy it right now, that's a large part is because of algorithmic traders. I'm not speaking specifically if you're talking about one share, but if you're talking about like 1,000 shares or 10,000 shares, a lot of the algorithmic and high frequency traders, they do what's called market making.
Yeah.
So they'll put bids and like bid orders on pretty much every single industry, and they do it in a mathematical way where they can retain money. And they do that so every single person always has the opportunity to go and get a price for whatever they want. They can always pretty much reach their demand, which does provide economic value. Another one is there's this concept called arbitrage. So what arbitrage is kind of, if you see on eBay, there's a baseball selling for $2, and then you see the exact same one is selling on Amazon for $5. So then you buy up all the baseballs on eBay and you sell them on Amazon. That's arbitrage. And then you're making profit in the middle. That's arbitrage. So there's a...
So arbitrage is the profit you're making out of that transaction, or...
Specifically, it's risk-free profit. Okay. Right, where you're just like finding it on eBay and then you're just selling it on Amazon. You didn't risk anything.
Yeah.
But then there's also what's called statistical arbitrage, but that's a bit different, but it's still in the same category. But essentially there's a huge economic assumptions that there's no arbitrage in the market, that you can always get, you're always getting the fair price. And where that assumption comes from is that if there was arbitrage, somebody would take the arbitrage and they would make the money, and then that would remove the arbitrage. So then there would be no arbitrage. But the people who are giving everyone the fair price are those that are taking those advantages. And that's what a lot of algorithmic traders are doing.
Basically, they're taking advantage of the arbitrage, or no?
In a lot of ways, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's also called statistical arbitrage. But yeah.
Is that positive or is that negative?
So then you can say it gives everybody the exact price that something should be at. So
okay.
They say often like everything is priced in. So if you see like traders that are just using their brain, there's a lot of criticism where they'll say like, no matter how smart you are, like the price is always right and you can never kind of beat the market. I'm sure you've probably maybe heard of that one or two times.
Yeah.
And well, the reason that the price is always right, quote unquote, is because there's people who are trading in the millionth of a second that every time the price deviates from right, they immediately sell it or buy it to go and bring it right back down to absolute right. So then that's arguable economic value. You can make that argument, right?
Right.
So,
right.
But there is a lot of criticism where like you're taking like the big funds, they take Nobel Prize winners or huge physicists and PhDs and all this different stuff. And there is a huge argument of like, if you have somebody who could be doing like super advanced, maybe working on electric vehicles or this or that or something, and instead they're like just trading stocks all day, like doesn't the world lose? Yeah. Which I think is a strong argument. I don't think the argument that it's positive is very strong.
Right.
I think everybody has a right to make their own money. So,
yeah, that's fair. What do you see? So is algorithmic trading something that's like anybody can capitalize on, or is it just big companies? Or you were talking about it's trading in the seconds and not nanoseconds, or in the...
It depends on, so if you're competing with these big guys, and so if you're looking at, for example, like Apple again, you have no shot. You pretty much have no shot because all the big guys who have billions and billions of dollars that they're spending on like the most advanced hardware and like all the world's geniuses, and they're paying them millions and millions of dollars to beat you, you're not gonna crack it. Like you're just not gonna beat them. It's not likely. You're not gonna speed it up. And there's a lot of different advantages like even exchanges will give these huge funds. One example that I was reading about was they let like different exchanges let funds rent computers inside the exchange, because the amount of speed it takes for say I want to do this, and the message goes over the internet from my house in downtown Manhattan or whatever, my office in Manhattan, and it goes like 10 blocks over to Wall Street, that time is lost money. So they let them rent computers within the physical exchange.
Really?
I don't know if the NASDAQ actually does it. I don't know which ones. I didn't see which ones, but I saw that big exchanges do this. Where then they let them have their wires directly connected to their central computer, so they have absolutely zero time lost, and they can.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, so you do not have a shot. But I recently saw that there's arguments for like penny stocks or small traded stuff that they don't want to get involved in, or they just don't have the time, or it's not worth it for them to get involved in, that a normal person could use those different strategies in those like smaller, smaller market cap kind of areas, is where people can make a significant advantage.
So by different strategies, you're talking about like algorithmic trading, for example, right? Or okay.
Yeah.
So basically it's not really for the average Joe.
I would say like not at all. Like you're really talking about the world's smartest geniuses with the world's most complicated technology.
Right. So we're talking about like, where have we seen algorithmic trading applied now in the real world?
There's a couple like pretty huge companies right now. So there's Renaissance Tech is the most famous one. I believe the Medallion Fund has made 40% returns year on year for the past, I think, 20 years. So that no other hedge fund has been able to come close. Every other hedge fund, you're talking about like 12-15%. Those are the great ones. The great hedge funds, you're talking 12-15%. The Medallion Fund is 40%. So it's totally, and that's a whole different world. But then there's also Jane Street, Hudson River Trading, Citadel, Virtue, Optiver. These are all different kind of like funds, market makers and hedge funds and all this stuff that are involved in the algorithmic trading space. As well, you're seeing now JP Morgan and different like big banks, they're really starting to create a quant trading space. And there's differences between that and algorithmic trading, but it's a bit more technical. But they are starting to hire, like, definitely right now. I was talking to my friend, he was saying, like, yeah, like, Excel's getting, like, what's it called? Like, it's like over time, Excel's getting slowly removed, and now it's becoming Python. And that the finance space is getting more infiltrated with these big, like, math guys and comp sci guys and physicists and all this stuff.
Interesting. So do you feel that you know, the criticisms you were mentioning earlier and the benefits, do you feel that the benefits outweigh the criticisms, and why is that in your opinion?
I don't know. You can't, like, I don't think anybody thinks it's a moral high ground, that, you know what I mean? But I think everybody kind of has a right to make profit, and to make profit competitively with the best tools and that they can come up with. And I think if people have the ability to make that money and they're not getting money in other places, then they deserve.
But do you think though that the profit that they're making is, you know, obviously everybody should have the opportunity to make money and whatnot, right? Like you're saying, but
right,
this isn't people we're talking about, right? From what I'm understanding, this is just, you know, the biggest corporations, the biggest hedge funds, you know, the biggest, you know, of the big, right? So everybody right. else is, you know, the normal person is not able to capitalize on this, right?
Right. Yeah, no, but I mean, I guess the question is, should the number one in MIT, like the number one engineer at MIT, should he be forced to work at Tesla or Facebook or some corp or whatever different company? Or if he wants to go and make more money, is the opportunity to make more money, and he can make a company more money, should he then be allowed to have that opportunity to make himself and a company more money?
I hear you. Yeah.
If he's that super genius and it makes sense for them to pay him that much, and he can make that much money for them, then I think he deserves to have that much money.
That's true. Okay, yeah, that's true. I could see that. How do you think that algorithmic trading is going to change the future of the market and economy?
It totally depends with... It completely depends on specifically, like, this ChatGPT stuff as an example. It depends on if we move it to long-term investment and how much data we can start to get. And then that could significantly change a lot of things. Like I said, right now it's all trading. It's all kind of just doing like small little things on the seconds and nanosecond time scale. But then I'm interested with, like, 50 years from now, it just feels like you're going to have computers that can immediately come up with an appropriate valuation for a company, or could run some sort of simulation.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? That just feels like crazy. Where the future would be.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know. That's like a pipe dream, but I don't necessarily know where it's going right now. I'm still learning. I still don't know anything. Like, there's like, I'm still 2 years into what's probably like a 15-year journey for me to really, like, have an accurate sense of all this
stuff. That's fair. That's very fair. I get what you're saying. So run me through again exactly what you're doing in your role right now, just so I can get... Now, after understanding algorithmic trading, now I can piece both together fresh in my mind.
Right. So my role is basically, like, right now, I have a client, or I have somebody, or the computer. The computer says, go buy a million USD for Canadian dollars, right? Mm-hmm. Now, how do I want to go and execute that order? Do I want to do the whole million just at this very second? do I want to split it up into smaller chunks? If I want to split it up into smaller chunks, how do I split it up into smaller chunks? What pieces should I split up into smaller chunks? Could I send maybe some Canadian pesos, then USD? Could I do, and if so, how much and what percentage and all these different stuff. This is like what I'm currently doing research on and trying to come up with like a mathematical equation and a mathematical optimization for what would be the best way to split up this order into small, tiny chunks that would best execute that trade. Like, assuming we've already decided this is the best trade to do, how do I avoid the most amount of loss in the process of executing the trade? Because in any trade, you're going to face some kind of resistance and some kind of fees and all this different stuff. So mm-hmm. how do I minimize that as much as possible?
So basically, and make the most money? Trying to get the absolute efficiency you can get.
Exactly.
Okay. That's nice. That's very good stuff.
Yeah, that's currently what I'm working on. Yeah.
There you go. So how are you liking it?
It's fun. It's so much fun. It feels yeah. like I'm like playing around with a problem. Like, it's like, it's funny. I was saying, like, usually when you're doing like homework or a test or something and it takes you more than like 10 minutes, you're like, I'm probably making a mistake. Or if the whole, like, you know, if your whole page is filled with work and it gets too complicated, you're like, I made a mistake somewhere. And then it's like with the research, it's like, no, that's the process. Like, wow. that's the entire process.
Yeah.
And it's making me really appreciate as well, like the kind of genius of other people's discoveries. Like, it makes, like, you kind of see them like you see like Newton and whatever, kind of as like not a real person, right? You don't really consider like how would it be possible to come up with what Newton did. And I think just because I'm in the process of trying to come up with something myself, that I'm like, yeah, how is it possible to come, yeah. like to think about all the other math discoveries that you just kind of read in like textbooks or whatever, that a real person thought that out. It's really making me appreciate that a lot more.
I think math is one of those fields where it's not really like other ones where, you know, the discoveries you make aren't right there. Like, they are right there. The math is in the nature and whatnot, right? But right. you're discovering the math, right? You're figuring out yeah. the math. It's I feel like it's math is one of those fields where the discoveries in them, like you're saying, are like, I can't even conceptualize coming across a discovery in math, right? It's like to that extent. But science, right. I could, for example, conceptualize, you know what? I'm in the lab looking at so-and-so whatever, and right. I figure out this, right? Or I find this. But with math, right. it feels a lot harder to conceptualize. Maybe that's just because I'm also a bio major. That also could be the other thing, but...
No, but sometimes I get exactly what you're saying, right? But I think I've had a new perspective as well, where, like, you think of, like, when they found out about the microbio theory with, like, all the different mm-hmm. cells and everything.
Yeah.
Was, if I remember, some guy put... He put just a piece of like, he put something like a piece of his skin or something just underneath a microscope. And then he saw all these different small things like squirming around and right. moving and all that stuff. So kind of remove yourself from all the theory that we've already known. Just imagine you look through a little glass thing and you put some water or something underneath it. And then you see these super, super tiny things that are moving. And then you come up with a whole theory of bacteria. And that the human body is a bunch yeah. of tiny little microscopic little pieces that are all coordinating to, like, that sounds like a crack dream, right? Like,
yeah, it actually, you're right.
You know what I mean? And for you yeah. to think, no, that's how the whole world works. Like, that's not necessarily like empirically observed that all the different cells are like dancing together like this. Like,
that's
you take
true.
The small observations and then you kind of come up with a model intertwining all of, you know what I mean?
100%. You're actually right. That's a very good analogy.
So then in a lot of ways, like math is starting to feel even I thought it was only purely kind of theoretical, but kind of even now with my research is like, yeah, it's all theory, right? But mm-hmm. then I'm plotting out functions and I'm trying to look at them and I'm trying to understand relationships and all this different stuff. And in a lot of ways, it feels empirical in that sense. where you're kind of just like you don't understand. You put this rock beside this thing, and then it starts pulling it towards it, and you're like, what's going on here? And you measure the distance, and you have a stopwatch, and you're seeing how much it's moving, and all this different stuff. And then you try the rock with like different rocks and all this different stuff, and then you plot it all out, and you're like, what is going on? And then you come up with this idea that, oh, I think this rock, it's like has some invisible attraction thing, and it's can be described in the same way as acceleration, and that it causes this and this and that, and you know what I mean?
You're right. That's an interesting conversation, man. So tell me, man, would younger Saif have imagined ever to be in a role like this, or did you have different dreams for yourself when you were younger?
Bro, he would be so disappointed I don't have a Nobel Prize right now.
Oh, it's like that.
He would be like, yo, you're not at Harvard? What's wrong with you?
It's like that, eh?
No, but yeah, like realistically, yeah. I would if my younger self knew I was studying math and I was getting to do research in math and all of this stuff, he would be super happy. It's just kind of funny. Have you watched Good Will Hunting?
No.
It's a movie about this he's like a janitor, but he's like a super like math genius and all this stuff. Matt Damon's in it, Ben Affleck's in it.
Oh yeah.
Like Batman, yeah. He's just like a super genius. And I remember when I was coming into this research, I was thinking like, yeah, that's gonna be me. I'm gonna zoom through this. It was not me. But it's all good.
Bro, I swear, you know the one thing I can respect really about, I can respect multiple things, but the one thing I'm going to focus on mentioning right now that I can respect, you know, in mathematicians is you guys, I swear, just like work on the same thing over and over. And that to me is just like, I know it's in so many fields, like, you know, science, you know, other sciences is the same, you know, even social sciences, you know, it's all the same. But to me, maybe it's just because I don't really have a mathematical brain and I never have. But to me, I'm like, you know, you have an equation and you're going through that multiple times over cycles. Like, I can't imagine that, man. Like, that's exhausting, you know?
I kind of think of it like I think the reason we go over the same problems over and over again is because, like, in a lot of ways, what the sentences math says are true no matter who said them, where they said them, what universe they said them in, anything. It's independent of all of that. Everything that is said in math, if it's true, it's true. Doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Kind of Socrates kind of said it. He said like scientists are like, I think he said that they're three times removed from reality or something.
Yeah.
Because if, like, just as an example, is like if you were in a different universe, everything you know about biology, chemistry, physics, everything would be false, right? But all the different math laws that you know would be without a shadow of a doubt true still.
Wow.
That if this, then this, then that, then that, you would still be very confident in those conclusions. So it's kind of like a theory of everything. So then that's why there's always like new dimensions to looking at it, I think, because it's so generalized. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You reminded me of, I took philosophy, what was it? 125, I think. It was logic, right?
Right.
And you just reminded me exactly of, you know, because obviously you talked about Socrates and we talked about, you know, this, that, you know.
And you guys learn like if P then Q.
Yeah, yeah, if exactly.
If not Q, then P is the same thing.
That's exactly
what. If not Q, then not P. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't really realize you guys do the same thing in math, but it makes sense.
No, we have to learn that because that's how all the theorems are proven. So we have to understand that. And that's exactly where it comes from is we start from. So then if you took a class on logic, you start from one axiom or a set of axioms.
Yeah.
Right. And then you can prove that. If you assume the axioms, because you don't really prove, you never prove a statement, you prove the implication. You prove, and then you assume the axioms that are sufficient for that implication.
Right.
To get to the next conclusion, right? So you say without needing to know what it is, if a function is continuous, what does continuity mean? Doesn't matter for this one. If you have a thing that does this thing and does that thing, then it also does this other thing, right? That is always true. Like, and when you prove it, it's always true. It doesn't matter if that thing actually exists or not, or where you're saying it or whatever.
Yeah.
But if there was a thing that does those things, then it also has to do that thing, right? And that's what all the different theorems in math, all of them are saying, really.
It's interesting, actually. So tell me, what are your goals in the future here?
Goals in the future?
Doesn't have only to be to do with math, you know, or with algorithmic trading, or just your life. What are your goals?
No, we're going to be a billionaire out here.
That's
without a doubt.
Inshallah.
I'm going to be a billionaire. Yeah, inshallah.
With God's will, you got it.
But outside of that, like for side quests, like when I'm bored, you know, like
I'm just going to go, you know, like hit up this one castle.
Yeah, I don't know. Might like go and like climb Mount Everest. We'll see. I don't know.
Like just a little like a light one too.
Yeah, just a little. Yeah.
On your day off, you know, like.
Yeah.
When you have a day off, of course. You're right? A billionaire, yeah. So just you ain't like, having like, many days off. But when you do in the future.
I'm feeling tired today. Maybe I should, instead of working, I'll just go climb Mount Everest.
Yeah, I'll just pull a mission on Mount Everest. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Be like a cute little thing.
That's just a normal thing to do.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel that. So what other side quest?
I don't know. We'll see. I want to get my master's. Hopefully maybe get my PhD as well.
Yeah.
If the timing and everything works out, that would be fun. But yeah, I'm not too sure. I guess those are like the main things that I focus on. In other realms of my life, I don't really have 5 to 10 year long goals or anything like too focused on, I guess, right now.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Tell me, I know you're a big reader. Tell me the three best, you can only do three, the three best books you have ever read in your life and you'd recommend for anybody here to read, and why each one.
Yeah, number one would be The Autobiography of Malcolm X. Number two, I don't even want to give this one, but it's kind of a classic, but it would be like 1984. That's a good one, but I don't like Orwell. Giving that one out. Yeah, George Orwell.
That's a crazy book, though. That's a really good book.
Yeah, right? But I think you should at least have read it once. It is a book you should have read once. 100%. Another one is... Ray Dalio, he's this hedge fund manager. He has this recent book, Changing Principles for Dealing with the Changing World Order. That, I think, right now, as soon as possible, you should definitely read. Very relevant to current times. I think it's a really great book. That would be my three.
There we go. I'm actually going to read all three. I've already read 1984, but I read that a few years ago when we read it in school, right?
Right.
I got to go back because that book has always intrigued me, right? Actually, I think I did read it again, but I think I want to read it one third time, to be honest with you.
Right.
And then the Ray Dalio I'll read as well. Malcolm X.
I highly recommend
it. I actually added Malcolm X, the autobiography. I think we had a conversation similar one time you told me, you know, about it. And I think I downloaded the book because I want to read it.
Yeah.
So in order, which one?
Order. I feel like they occupy different spaces.
They do.
If that
makes
sense. They
definitely do.
Is The Autobiography of Malcolm X, I think it gives you a different perspective kind of on, I don't know, maybe for me it was on morality, on current politics, previous politics, on kind of how to live your life. Like there were a lot of like very big messages in there that I really resonated with it, especially like redemption and all this different stuff. Because he was a big criminal and then he turned his life around, right? Then 1984, I think, gives you a big perspective on like totalitarian governments and stuff.
Yeah.
If I could think of a better book, I'd put it over 1984, but that's probably the best I can think of right now.
And that's an incredible book, man.
Yeah, it is a really great book. it's just kind of, I guess, like cliche. I think the connotation has been ruined behind it. You know what I mean?
But I think the reason why even I'm saying, even though I've read it twice before, each time I've read it had to do with, I think one time I read it in my English class in the U of A. And one time I read it in high school, right? Both times had to do with school. I had a deadline, whatever, right? And both times I understood the importance of them. But I feel now, you know, with the mind I have now and the time I have now and whatever, I'm like, you know what? I want to actually read it one more time to truly understand it again. And, you know, not with a deadline, not with a teacher telling me right about this or that, right? And I think even though, like you're saying, it is cliche and it's known and a lot of people have read it and even in all of our high schools usually, right?
Right.
But I think that a lot of us haven't actually read the book. You get what I'm saying? Like we haven't actually read it, actively read it.
Right. That's a really good point. But 1984 gives you, I think if you've never read it, then you're missing a big perspective on totalitarian governments and freedom and like a lot of the fundamental values of Western culture and where they kind of come from. But and then for the last one, the Changing World Order, I think just gives you a very unique current outlook of the West, of the West and the East and the conflict with them economically, politically, domestically. It just gives you a very comprehensive kind of crash course on like current state international politics and where everybody is.
And that's important for right now.
And it's not just international politics, like as well, it talks about on the international scale, on the individual scale. So it gives you a very good sense of like what is actually going on right now in the world and what kind of players are playing and what are their effects and all this stuff. So I think it's very unique in that capacity.
Fair. Good summary on all those books. I'm going to check them out for sure.
Yeah.
We're going to end it off after this one last question, but I got a question for you here.
Right.
The three movies.
Movies.
Or they could be documentaries too, but.
No, I like Training Day. That's probably one of my favorite. And then I like Social Network and Good Will Hunting. Those are my three.
Social Network like the show or?
No, Social Network like the one on Zuckerberg.
Isn't that a show?
No, the movie.
Yeah, it's a movie. I think I was watching that one with the family and I fell asleep, bro. So I forgot if it was a movie or a show. No,
I've fallen asleep a couple times watching it too.
But it's deep, bro. It's good.
It was when I would first see it when I was like 14, I thought it bored me so much. Yeah. But then when I watched it again and I'm kind of Zuckerberg's age, it just like really like blew my mind. Like, just like, bro, this guy was 19, hacked Harvard's databases and like on a as a joke because his girlfriend dumped him while he was drunk. And then when I was just like seeing it as a story, right? Whatever. But I was like, wait, this guy could be me, but it's not me. Like, this is just a person that I could know, that I could like have been like, you know what I mean?
And then it's like, what am I doing?
Literally. Like, it was just like, what am I doing?
And bro, now, bro, Zuckerberg, bro, Meta, man. Look at that. Right? Like, what is that, bro? That's everything's owned by Zuckerberg.
Bro, right?
Who would you say are the two biggest people, bro? I'd say like Elon Musk and Zuckerberg, to be honest, like the two most prominent people right now.
Yeah.
Would you not say?
In the like business space for sure.
Yeah. In like the public's eye view, kind of.
Right, yeah, I'd say that. Most influential right now.
That's crazy, man. What's the third one, though?
So I said The Social Network, Good Will Hunting, and then Training Day.
Okay.
I just love Training Day. Have you watched that one?
No.
It's Denzel Washington. He plays like a kind of like crooked cop, and it's just like super exciting thriller, and it's just like fun to watch. Like, it's really a fun watch.
Okay, I'm going to watch that. And then the last one was Good Will Hunting. What is that?
That one's the one I was saying earlier about the mathematician guy.
Right.
At MIT with Matt Damon and Ben Affleck.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. There we go. Here we go. All right, Habibi, thank you so much, man. Do you have any other comments you want to make before ending off? Or
no, I think I said my points.
What's the one advice you'll give to everybody listening here? One state, or it doesn't have to be even advice. What's the one phrase? Because I have a feeling I know the phrase. If
you're competing against me, you're going to lose.
Oh!
That's it.
If you guys, bro, I have this guy on FaceTime right in front of me. If you guys could see what he just did, he pulled the mic all the way to his face. And he said that. So that means he's basically spitting on you guys. Bro, that's a boss move. Watch out, you guys. Trust me, though. I ain't going to be competing against Safe. He's going to be competing against me. All right, you guys. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you so much, Safe, for joining the podcast and teaching us.
Thank you for having me, man.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Thank you guys for listening. I'll have Safe's. Did you want your social media public or no?
Yeah, you can follow me at Masry2x, MASRY2x. And then you can find me on LinkedIn, just SEIF METWALLY.
There we go. All right, you guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll catch you guys in the next one. Take it easy.